Welcome to Talking Insights. I'm your host, Antonio, and we are joined today by Karen Lieshout, co-CEO of Skim. With over 25 years of experience in the insights industry, Karen, you specialize in decision behavior and strategic marketing, and I'm so grateful for you to accept this invitation to be here. I really want to know about your career, your opinions on the key trends of the industry and the insights, and how you see leadership in this always changing industry that's market research and insights. So thank you so much for being here, and thank you for being in the podcast.
Super nice to be here as well. Thanks.
And I wanted to start by asking about the company. The company Skim just turned 45 years old. That's a big milestone. And I wanted to ask just about that, like, what are some of the key milestones in the company's history? Like, can you share some of them?
Yeah, well, it started before, of course, I was at the company. I am like over 30 years in the company, so that's also quite some time. But when I joined Skim, we were actually the global expert in conjoint analysis. You could say it like that, because we were a very methodological focused company. And that was because, we had a license, or we had a collaboration with Salto Software, who is specialized in conjoint analysis. And we sold also their software. But what we actually did, we started to develop with them how conjoint can actually work even better. And so we became conjoint experts. And if you know conjoint a little bit, it's also being used for a lot of questions that are more strategic. So in product development, in pricing, innovations, actually right from the beginning, we were working for the headquarters of the bigger companies. And that is actually quite unique if you're so small. I am talking about 10 people when I joined. But that was just the case because of our specialization. So because of that, the methodology and the rigor we had also became, for example, a preferred supplier of Procter & Gamble globally in pricing. And can you imagine, we were only 20 people. So if you then get that position, it's amazing for a company, but it's also a huge, huge change, because at that moment you grow a lot, and then you have to do a lot to keep it all manageable, which was not always easy. But another thing that happened is that the company said to us, hey, Karen, do you actually realize that our headquarters is in the US or in Cincinnati or in Atlanta, whatever? And we thought, actually, that's true. We need to think about expansion. So at that moment, we built an expansion strategy, having a plan of we are going to the US in that year, we're going to LATAM in this year, we're going to Asia in that year, etc. And that was quite some years where we focused on expansion. Later on, I could say the clients actually told us, like, hey, do you actually know that... that we are not interested in conjoint. I'm now making a fool of myself. It's not completely like that. But, you know, we were really conjoint experts. But we were solving pricing questions. We were helping them with their innovation, and we were helping them with their communication. So what we started to do is to say, hey, forget about mentioning conjoint. Still be a very, very good, strong player in advanced analytics, but focus more on what we are actually helping the clients with, which is pricing, innovation, and brand communication. So that is the next step, also leading to building more knowledge in those markets.
The company is 45 years, and I cannot stress this enough. You've seen a lot of changes in the industry over these 45 years, and even in your own career. What are some of the most significant changes that you saw with consumer decision behavior, and even throughout the years? Like, how do you see those changes?
Of course, there's always change in consumer behavior, and that is given by changes. The environment is changing. The factors behind how consumers make decisions and how you can influence consumer decisions is not so different, but the environment is so different. And that is why companies or the brand managers, the decision makers, actually need always different kind of help. And it also means a lot of changes in what we as insight professionals actually do and how we work with our clients, our stakeholders. And I think currently the disruption is huge. So all those 45 years, we've always I would say I would use the word evolve. We evolved, but at this moment, I don't think evolvement is the right word anymore. It's really about transformation. And I do say Skip is also in a transformation phase, and I've never said that before. It's always evolvement. But now it's really transformation that we are in. And that's because of the environment that is disrupted. And the change was always there. But currently the change, how it's unpredictable, how complex it is at the moment, and the pace, I've never seen that before. And of course, it's due to new technologies, AI plays a big role. But there are also other factors that play a role, which is much more also the climate change or the political instability that we are seeing now every day, or the increasing inequalities. All those things lead to more change and more uncertainty. And that is something we experience as consumers, as individuals, and we have to navigate this. But thinking about our clients, the stakeholders or the decision makers we help, they face a lot of uncertainty. They don't know. Yeah, it's difficult to define their strategy in this unpredictable world. So that's something that we have to be very aware of in our industry. Okay, what is our answer to that?
And I can almost add that being adaptable is also one of the main things that a company nowadays should do, right? Being resilient and being adaptable with all this transformation that you were just mentioning. Like, I can imagine, like, it's something that you have to keep in mind all the time.
Yeah.
How can you do that? How can you keep in mind that you have to stay adaptable and resilient in an industry that's, as you said, constantly changing and constantly evolving?
That what we do is, first of all, you have to know what are the changes in the market that are relevant for you. So what we do a lot is talking to people in the industry who know a lot, who have a bigger view. We talk a lot with clients who have strategic positions. What do you expect? What are your problems? Where it's going? And so that is the first thing you need to do. And for example, one of the changes that's for us very, very important, which is a huge impact on our company, is the fact that the data is everywhere. So it's the democratization of data and insights at the client side. So data is everywhere in organizations, thanks to new technologies, thanks to AI. And yeah, in the past, the insight function were owning the data. And they owned the data, they made it, they translated to information, they made knowledge out of it, and in the end, wisdom. And today, insight is not owned anymore by the insight functions. And there are increasingly more specialized functions within organizations that turn data into wisdom. And I refer to departments like revenue management, and we work a lot with them, e-commerce, sustainability, user experience, all kind of specialists. Let's say those formerly non-researchers now have access to data and insights. But actually, they are not experts in human decision making, and they still need help to understand this and also to put it in the right context to make decisions. Of course, they still reach out, those functions and stakeholders, to the insight company of their company. But what we notice is that they are more and more reaching out to external partners like us, directly. So what that means, and now it's coming, what I want to say, our stakeholder audience is expanding, and that's a huge thing for us. I had to give you an indication. 3 years ago, only 5% of our stakeholders were not inside functions in the leading companies we work for. Today, 25% of our business is being done directly with other specialized functions than the traditional inside functions. And we expect that will increase to at least 50% in 3 years' time. And why is this so impactful? Because those stakeholders, sorry, I'm talking, but
by all means, it's super interesting.
Completely different language. They're not talking insights. They don't want to have a research. They want to have an answer to business question. And if we talk research, they're not interested. And that's huge. Because can you imagine what it means for an insights company?
Yeah. And that's really interesting. And that's kind of a good follow-up for my next question that you just did. What trends, and speaking about the future and speaking about the foreseeable future, like, how do you see what trends do you see shaping the future?
This one, indeed, this is for us. We have identified this one as most important things, apart from the change and uncertainty, because the uncertainty is also huge. So what that means is, again, that, yeah, they rely on us. Yeah? They want to make an uncertain situation. They want to still have the predictions, but prediction they can rely on. And we have, as an insights industry, we have methodologies, we have robust methodologies, we have validated models, so that helps. But what we tend to forget is that if you do not put the insights in the right way in the context of their business challenge, then actually they don't get reliability and you don't give them certainty. And that is something that needs to change. And the other thing with the stakeholders, the different kind of stakeholders that we serve, means we have to learn to talk a different language and we need to understand really their business environment. If you think about it, we think insight is important. But for them, research is time, cost money, it's complex. They want to have the voice of the consumer, but they don't want to do a research per se. And we think they are winning for us. So if we are not changing our language and if we are not showing that we know all the different aspects in their business area that is also relevant for their decisions, then they will not see us anymore as a partner.
That's interesting. Like one of the last episodes that we did, we kind of mentioned exactly that and how we cannot have like the big trifecta, you know, you cannot like have good, cheap and fast at the same time. There's always something. And then you need to like showcase and then show like the stakeholders the whys. And why is that? Like you cannot have like the three things all at once. You need to compromise, you need to do some moldings on what you want and what you expect. But most importantly, yeah, you need to talk their language and they need to understand you. That's really interesting. I was going to ask you about you and your career and what are some of the biggest challenges that you faced in your career?
There are a lot of them. So what a big challenge is. In my career, I think I already mentioned opening offices, expansion, the years of expansions. I thought that this was quite challenging. Super nice, by the way. But for example, we started to acquire a different agency in a different region. In this case, it was the US. It was the first country where we went to. And it went totally wrong. And so there's a lot of things going on and trouble and things. But in the end, we learned that for us, for Skin, it works best if we send our own people to a different region or to a different country to open an office. So that was a great learning. So it's a challenge, but it's also a great learning. Challenge always comes with learnings. I think also to make Skim more client-centric, a big challenge for Skim, and I think a lot of people may think client-centric, you're always client-centric. Yeah, yeah. We were client-centric in the sense that we listen to them and we will always find a solution for their problem. We adapt our solutions completely to their question. But what I mean is really building a relationship, really like human beings, etc. And that is something that, yeah, it was not so natural for Skim because we're a kind of technical company and then you are different. So we always doubled our business every 5 years. We always did that, but we never worked on relationship management. So that is something, yeah, you need to do that. Otherwise, if you don't do it, you lose actually, yeah, reality, you lose what is happening in that company. So that was another thing that was quite challenging in a more technical company. And one of the things I feel for myself was the biggest challenge is related to culture. We have a very, very strong culture at Skim. And if you work so long at Skim, you think that is quite normal. But you only learn how important your company culture is if you lose it. And I think that many people who are in a reorganization or have been acquired in these days, they recognize what I'm saying. You can steer on certain goals, you can steer on KPIs, but you can lose the heart of your company. And with that, you also lose the success of your company. And I experienced that one time at Skim, when one of our Skim officers started to behave differently. And mm-hmm. I thought, well, you know, it didn't feel well. It didn't feel good. My gut feeling said, this is different. But I was rationalizing it. And I was thinking, okay, this is just also a different culture in that country, right? So I also need to respect that. But in the end, it was not that. It was really hurting the DNA of Skim. And we lost it. And when I realized it, it was a little bit too late. And we had, there was a lot of damage done and we had to rebuild it. And we did. So, again, learning. I mainly learned to trust my gut feeling and also how important culture and the heart of a company is. And you have to stay true to it.
And how do you foster, like speaking of culture, then how do you foster that culture? Like how do you keep it? How do you keep people wanting to innovate? How to keep people to collaborate? I think that's like, as you are saying, like that's one of the most important things in a company. If they skip that heart, that soul of the company, then that's...
There's a lot of things. If you have a certain culture, first have to know and see that culture, what that culture is, and see if that's successful. So I know that now. So then you write it down. And you have to bring it across to people how important it is, and not just saying it, but exemplify it every day. You need to be the example. It should be built in every training. It should be built in every presentation. So it's natural. And I think that that is fine. But if you grow bigger, then I would say I feel that is one of my most important roles as a CEO to foster that. And I'm not sure if that is always, if every CEO is thinking like that. But yeah, that is my conviction that it's the strength of a company. Yeah. And then, yeah, for the rest, you know, yeah, you give ownership to people and trust. But that is actually also the culture. So,
yeah.
So it's the culture. So.
Absolutely, yeah. And it was interesting that you mentioned like the role of the CEO, especially you are co-CEO. And I'm going to do a little bit of context. When I first talked with you about this and doing this interview, and we talked about being a way to promote International Women's Day and international and to promote like the voices of women in the industry, in the market research industry. And I wanted to ask you how it is to be co-CEO, to be co-CEO with another person in a company this big, and how do you keep this culture? How do you keep working? How it is to work with another person in such a high role? Like
share a CEO function. That is, I think it's very rare. I do think it exists in more companies, but it's very rare. And it's even more rare when you don't fight. So we don't fight. We have good discussions because we complement each other. So that's good. But I like it because I like to collaborate, first thing. And I think it's successful because we respect each other. We respect each other's ideas, different kind of opinions. But you also have to have something in common. And that is the culture. As a DNA, you cannot learn something. Eh? You have to have it in your heart or in your system. So the real, real, real important decisions sometimes are the easiest for us because it's just very simple what comes first and what comes next. So for example, our ambition, the company, what we want to be and where we want to go towards is something that is most important for us. Money, KPI, is for us, and the profit is for us a precondition. And if you can say that, a lot of companies say that, but doing it is different. So if you say it, but you are in a different shape, mindset, it influences all your decisions. So if you're really like that, naturally, then you never have those really, really, really big conflicts. Or because these are the things that really make a difference in every decision you take every day.
That's so inspiring.
And I am super proud of it. So I'm proud of sharing the CEO function because we can do it together. We collaborate, and I expect collaboration in our company. If you cannot collaborate, you cannot make a career at Skip. So then you show yourself as well. And the second reason I like it because we are men and a woman, and I like that a lot. More equality. I'm never thinking of like women and men versus men, but on the other hand, there are differences, and that's good. But yeah, that's your both. Representing a company, I think that's super good.
That's really, really inspiring. And what was one of your favorite projects to work on?
I always like, because I have a background in marketing and business economics, so I always liked it a lot to work directly with the business, so the marketing people. And so when I worked for a big innovation project with the R&D people and the marketing people in Danone, I liked that a lot. And it was, because of the tensions between different departments who have different opinions, and you have to navigate that. The insights you give is important, but you see a lot of other things as well. So that is what I like to do. So a little bit broader than the insights in itself.
Thank you so much for the conversation. It was honestly really inspiring. It's honestly really, really interesting to have a person in such a high role to share their experience and share their career and share the challenges and what was, even when it's good and when it's bad and when it's not so good. I think it's always important to share that and to learn from that. So thank you so much for being here.
In Peru, we do tailor-made events. We have the best venues in unique places full of magic. Or we could go back to a mythical place like the Sacred Valley of the Incas. Prepare yourself. More natural landscapes, more culture, parties, unforgettable places, new places to explore. We help you create an unforgettable event in a unique location.
Peru is the spot.